What I want to talk about today is a positive example that's set for you and I in the Bible. Something, an example we can all learn from because it certainly involves us. The world involves us. And we come up against some of the same trials and tribulations that these young men came up against and were very successful. And we can learn by what they did and following their example to be successful as well. Because God certainly wants us. When God called us, He didn't call us to fail. He called us to be successful and to overcome and to eventually one day be in His kingdom. And that's part of His plan. But a couple of the gentlemen I want to talk about, one is Joshua. And Joshua began his life as a slave in Egypt, living under the daily rule of Egyptian taskmasters, not having any say of his own, not having the freedom to do what he wanted to do, but he was at the mercy of whatever the taskmasters wanted him to do. Joshua in Hebrew means the Lord is salvation. That's what his name means. During his lifetime, besides being a slave in Egypt, he became personal assistant to Moses, assisting Moses in all of his tasks as a leader of Israel. He also became a military commander and a leader that the Israelites looked up to. Joshua was one of the 12 spies sent into the Promised Land before Israel was to enter it to see what was going on, what it was like. During the 40 years the Israelites wandered in the wilderness, Joshua served as a faithful aide to Moses. They're doing the will of Moses. His greatest accomplishment, though, was his faith and his loyalty to God. Always looking to God, trusting God, thanking God. Every day, his strengths were being a good student, learning all that Moses was teaching him, putting it into practice. And because of his obedience to God, his own skills, special skills, were increased, and he became a great military leader. Whenever Joshua consulted with God and listened to his directions, he was successful in war. His weakness at times was he failed to consult God before making a major decision, like signing a peace treaty with one of Israel's enemies that didn't work out so well. His obedience and faith in God made Joshua one of Israel's strongest leaders, a leader that they all looked to. He set an example for all of them and all of us to follow. Even when he was in the minority, he chose to follow God. He wasn't swayed by the numbers, by people who had a different outlook than he had. And because he was outnumbered, didn't mean anything to Joshua. He held fast to his relationship with God and relied on God. Another young man was Caleb. Caleb was also born as a slave in Egypt. And during his lifetime, he served as a leader among the tribe of Judah. He was also one of the spies that was sent into the Promised Land. He was a soldier and a shepherd. We first read about Caleb in the book of Numbers after the Israelites left Egypt. And as Moses chose him as one of the 12 spies, Caleb set an example of faith in God for strength and protection. And Caleb was a very strong person, but he didn't rely on himself. He relied on God. He continually relied on God with his whole heart for whatever he was dealing with, whatever he was facing. Caleb knew that when God gave him a task to do, God would also provide him with everything he needed to be successful. God doesn't give us a job to do and then walks away. God provides all the tools. Everything that we need to be successful as a Christian, God provides. Just like he did for Caleb. Like Joshua, Caleb spoke up for the truth even when he was outnumbered. He wasn't going to allow peer pressure or anyone else to change his mind about what was right. Caleb knew if he was loyal to God, that God would be loyal to him. He, along with Joshua, wandered along with the Israelites for 40 years. And because of his dedication, his loyalty, his obedience, was one of only two of the spies. One of two of all of Israel over the age of 20 that were allowed to enter the promised land. So it says something about these young men and their relationship, their dedication, their trust in God, their thankfulness for what God had provided them. That was where they looked to. How many of us during our lifetime have faced uncertain situations? We could probably all raise our hand to that, because that's part of life. Things happen in our lives that don't give us a clear picture of what the outcome will be. Many times we just don't know. Sometimes we have to move ahead with only minimum information available at the time. But we have to continue to move ahead. No one person can have the answer to every situation people face in life. That would be nice if we could, but that's not the way life works. That's why our past and current relationship with God is so important in the decisions that we make, especially as Christians, as children of God. When we're unsure of the end result of a decision we have to make, we make it based on our faith and trust God to deliver us, to provide for us. Do we trust God to help and guide us through some of our toughest decisions? Is that where we turn first, as Caleb and Joshua did? Are we thankful for all he's done for us in the past? Do we think back? You know, we just had the holiday Thanksgiving, and that day is dedicated to thanking God for all he's done. But do we thank God every day? Is every day Thanksgiving for us as Christians? Thanking God every day for our daily bread, for what he supplied for us. So let's read a little bit about Joshua and Caleb. What they were up against. How they stood fast to their belief and their relationship with God and their trust and their loyalty. And didn't give in, but stayed firm to their belief. If you turn with me to Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13. Numbers 13, beginning in verse 1. Something was just about to happen here. God, as we know, promised Israel freedom in a land that he would provide. That was just about to happen. God was just about to deliver on his promise. In chapter 13 and verse 1, it said, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a leader among them." So, even the spies, don't just choose anybody. I want somebody who's credible, who has the respect of the people, and will come back and give us a good, honest report. Verse 3, so Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran according to the command of the Lord, all of them men who were heads of the children of Israel, all of them who were well established, well known, who weren't novices. And in verse 17 of chapter 13, in verse 17, says, so Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, go up this way into the south and go up to the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage. Do this in a positive way, knowing that God is with you, is guiding you, is protecting you. Be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near the entrance of Hamath. So they went in. They're looking. They're looking around at everything that's growing, every city, town, what's going on there. Is it a fortress? What are the people like? They're looking at all of these things so that they can put a report together to bring back. In verse 23, it says, then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and there cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried it between two of them on a pole. So these clusters of grapes were so huge, took two men to carry them. Just an abundance of everything. They also brought some of the pomegranates and figs. So they were bringing back to show the Israelites everything that was happening there. All of that that was good, that was part of that promised land of milk and honey that God was giving them. And in verse 25, and they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. So they had spent over a month checking out things, seeing what was going on. And so they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran and Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all of the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. So they brought back all of those examples of the fruit of all of that that was taking place to give Israel an idea of what was going on. Verse 27, then they told him and said, we went into the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. So showing them the abundance. This is all waiting for us. This is part of the promise that God made to us, part of this promised land, our new home. But in verse 28, it says, nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Now, this isn't a negative report. This is what we saw. God can deal with that. God will back us up. But this is what we saw. Just letting you know. And in verse 29, the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, the Hittites and Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. So people were getting a little excited thinking about all of these people who live there. What are we going to do about them? How do we deal with that? Verse 30 says, then Caleb quieted the people before Moses. Wait a minute, folks. Listen. Let's think about this. And Caleb said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. Come on, people. What are you thinking? Let's go take it. God's promised it. He's provided it. Let's go. There's nothing to fear, nothing to worry about, as long as we trust God. That's what we're to do. Caleb was sure that Israel could take the land by overpowering the giants they would be facing. The giants were no challenge for God. They might be for Israel, but they certainly weren't for God. But what Caleb said didn't convince or change the minds of the people or of the other spies. They didn't want to hear it. In verse 31, but the men who had gone up with him, the other spies, said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land to which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight. They saw us as nothing. That was their report. 10 of the spies, that was their report. God's not mentioned. It's their point of view. What they see as human beings, without including God. The report of the giants and no confidence shown by the spies had an effect on Israel. It was enough to convince the Israelites not to go into the promised land. They listened to all of the negative reports and gave very little credibility to the two positive reports. In Numbers 14 and verse 1, it says, then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. They were stressed, depressed, nervous, didn't know what to do, because they were not trusting God. They had listened to all of the negativism and based their decision on that, and they were just distraught. And in verse 2, and all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, as they said many times before, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or only if we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? I wonder if God got sick of hearing that, because they said it enough. So in verse 4, they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. They would rather go back into slavery, give up their freedom, give up their future, give up the promised land that God put right there, step into it, take it, it's yours. They would rather give that up because they were not looking to God, not trusting God. Their faith was not in God. Sad. But they thought, let's return to Egypt. That would be better. And in verse 5 it says, then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. Can you imagine how down Moses and Aaron had to be? They trusted God. They knew that God would deliver the promised land, deliver any battle that they had to fight, that God would give them victory. And yet to see all of these people saying, no, we don't want that. Let us go back into slavery. And in verse 6, and Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out in the land, tore their clothes. Talk about being disappointed. About thinking, what can we do to help these people? How can we convince them to accept and take this promise that God has given us? How do we change their minds? And they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, if we please God, if we're obedient to God and we trust Him and we're thankful for what He's given us, if He delights in us, then He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not, verse 9, only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are bread. Their protection has departed from them, and their Lord is with us. And the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. Trust God. That's what they were being told. In verse 10, and all the congregation said to stone them. Stone them with stones. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the meeting before all the children of Israel. I wonder if God could even believe what he was seeing and hearing. Unbelievable. Sad. How disappointed the leadership was in the people. Based on everything God had done in the past, all of the miracles, providing everything Israel needed. And when they get to the threshold of taking possession of the promise of a land that will provide you with everything, and they had to plead with them not to rebel against God. Told them not to fear the people of the land. Trust God. He will provide. He will get us through. Now, without God, anybody who is given this frightening information about these people, they're giants. They outnumber us big time. They have fortified cities. There's no way we can have victory. Well, without God, that is frightening. But with God, and God promising to deliver, promising to give you this land, just trust me. Let me lead you. That didn't happen. But not only did they not want to listen to the leaders, they wanted to stone them. Absolutely amazing. In verse 11 of Numbers 14, and the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? And how long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them? What will it take, Moses? What will it take? In verse 12, I will strike them with a pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. All right. Moses may be fed up enough to say, you know what, God, that sounds like a good idea. It's just me and you. Let's move forward. Zap these people so we can get on with the business at hand. But that is now Moses' thought. Moses loved the Israelites. He cared for them. And he loved God as well. So in verse 13 it says, and Moses said to the Lord, then the Egyptians will hear it. For by your might you brought these people up from among them. And they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you, Lord, are among these people, that you, Lord, are seen face to face, and that your cloud stands above them, and you go before them in the pillar of cloud by day and in the pillar of fire by night. God, these people know that you are with the Israelites, that you protect them, that you provide for them. It's well known. And he goes on in verse 15, Moses continues on. Now if you kill these people as one man, then the nations will have heard of your fame, will speak saying, because the Lord was not able to bring these people into the land which he swore to give them, therefore he killed them in the wilderness. God, they'll say you couldn't control them. So you had to kill them. All credibility for you, God, will be gone. No more respect. No more awe as they look to God. And in verse 17, and now I pray, let the power of my Lord be great, just as you have spoken, saying, the Lord is a long-suffering and abundant in mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation. Pardon the iniquity of these people, I pray, according to the greatness of your mercy, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. Moses is pleading for God to forgive them. Instead of encouraging God to, yeah, let's zap them, do away with them, we'll start all over with me. Moses is asking God to please forgive them. In verse 20, then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word. I hear you, Moses. I hear you, so I'm pardoning them. But truly, as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and have put me to the test now these 10 times, as much as I hate to admit it, I'm sure I've tested God many more than these 10 times. But it said that they've tested him now these 10 times and have not heeded my voice. They certainly shall not see the land of which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it. They're not going into the promised land. They want to reject me. They want to do things their own way. They don't want to listen to the positive things about the promised land. They want to focus on the negative. Then they're not going to see it. In verse 24, but, God says, my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him. Something was different about Caleb. Caleb saw everything the 10 negative spies saw, but yet remained positive. Joshua saw everything the 10 negative spies saw, but remained positive because they trusted God and knew God would deliver. No doubt in their mind. They didn't even question it. And we read earlier, Cable says, let's go, people. Let's go take it. And they wouldn't do it. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different heart in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. So Caleb was going to be in the promised land. And in verse 26, it says, then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who murmur against me? I have heard these murmurings which the children of Israel murmur against me. Say to them as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. The carcasses of you who have murmured against me shall fall in the wilderness, all of you who were numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above, except, in verse 30, for Caleb and Joshua, you shall by no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. These two men who were positive, who were sure God could and would deliver them, who gave them a gift, a promise of the promised land, and would do everything he needed to do to make sure that they were able to take it. But your little ones, whom you said would be victims, I will bring in, and they shall know the land which you have despised. You won't know it, but your children will. Your children, along with Joshua and Caleb, will see the promised land. Because it is a promise I made, it's a promise I'm going to keep. And God did, according to what he said he would do. In verse 36, and the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation murmur against him by bringing a bad report of the land, those very men who brought the evil report about the land died by the plague before the Lord. All of these people who were negative, who were not trusting. But Joshua and Caleb remained alive of the men who went to spy out the land. Those two. What an example of being positive. What an example of trusting God. When all odds are against you, everybody else is against you. But yet, they stuck to their guns. They stuck to their belief. They stuck to their faith. They tried their best to get Israel to listen and enter the promised land, trusting God, that God would certainly deliver his promise. And it fell on deaf ears. All of their pleading wasn't listened to. After Israel heard what their punishment would be for disobeying God, they wanted to change their minds. Wait a minute, God. We've rethought this. We finally want to do what you say. But that wasn't going to change God's mind. It appears God had had enough. And in verse 39 of chapter 14, says, then Moses told these words to all the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly. And I can imagine they did. If they finally realized that you blew it. And in verse 40, and they rose early in the morning and went up to the top of the mountain saying, here we are. Here we are, God. And we will go up to the place which the Lord has promised, for we have sinned. Then Moses said, now why do you transgress the command of the Lord? For this will not succeed. It's not happening. You had your opportunity. God gave you everything to be successful with, and you turned it down. You turned your back on him. He's not here. He's not here to support you anymore. And in verse 42, Moses continues, do not go up, lest you be defeated by your enemies, for the Lord is not among you. God is not protecting you. God is not supporting you. God is not fighting your battle. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and you shall fall by the sword because you have turned away from the Lord. The Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up to the mountaintop. Continuing that mindset of, we're going to do what we want to do. But they presumed to go up to the mountaintop. Nevertheless, neither the ark nor the covenant of the Lord nor Moses departed for the camp. Nobody went with them. They had no support. They were on their own just like they wanted to be. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who dwelled in the mountain came down and attacked them and drove them back as far as Hormah. They were unsuccessful. And they were not going to be successful without God. And all they had to do was trust God, that God would get them through this. God would be there for them. God's promise did come true 40 years later. After the death of Moses, Joshua led Israel into the promised land to go into that land flowing with milk and honey and take it for their own. We can learn a lot from the example of Joshua and Caleb to always be thankful for the blessing God gives us and always trust Him no matter what. Even when it looks bad and we don't understand, we don't have all of the answers, but we trust God. You and I can become more thankful, more trusting of our God. We do that by building and tightening our relationship with God, spending more time in prayer, more time in study. The peer pressure that Joshua and Caleb must have felt had to be terrible. Being out there, being outnumbered, the two of them against 10 other people who everything they saw was negative, wouldn't work. How do we do this? Can't do it. Don't want to do it. Anything positive Caleb and Joshua said was shot down. All during their 40 days of spying. And I wonder how much arguing went on, especially from these 10 spies who thought it was a waste of their time to be there. We saw all we need to see. Let's go back. Can't be done. Let's go back and put together a new plan. Maybe go back to Egypt. But the attitude of why bother has been around since the beginning of God's church. Things don't look right. That's too much of a challenge. How do I ever overcome this? So why bother? It's the same unthankful, untrusting attitude that the 10 of the 12 Israelite spies had. Not trusting God. Peter is an example. The Apostle Peter is an example of how people, even so close to Jesus Christ, when they look to themselves, and only themselves can find out there are some true giants there that you can overcome without God. Even though you think you can, even though you think you're in a pretty good place and you can accomplish a lot, without God you can't. Let's turn to Mark 14. Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14 and verse 27. Mark 14 and verse 27. Said, then Jesus said to them, he's got his disciples with him, he said to them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. So he's giving them a heads up. And he goes on in verse 28, but after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. But Peter spoke up and said to him, even if all are made, if all the rest of these guys here, if they're made to stumble, yet I will not be. They may all falter. They may all make mistakes. Not me. And Jesus said to him, assuredly, I say to you today, even this night before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times. But Peter spoke more. He was getting excited now. He was getting serious. Trust me. If I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And the other 11 all said the same thing. If we have to give up our lives, we'll do it. Although Peter and the other disciples had the best intentions of doing just that, Peter soon found himself in a position of having to really trust God for his life. He was also going to have to face a giant in order to receive God's promise. It wasn't going to be easy. It certainly wasn't going to be as easy as Peter thought it was going to be. At the time Jesus was being interrogated by the high priest, Peter was out in the courtyard watching from a distance, maybe hiding behind a tree or a bush, poking his head around to see what was going on. In verse 66, it says, now Peter was below in the courtyard. One of the servant girls of the high priest came. And when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, you also were with Jesus of Nazareth. You're one of those 12 guys. I saw you with him. I remember that now. You were with him. But he, in verse 68, denied it, saying, I neither know nor understand what you're saying. I don't have a clue what you're talking about. I don't know this guy. And he went out on the porch, and a rooster crowed. And the servant girl saw him again and began to say to those who stood by him, hey, this is one of those guys. I remember seeing him with Jesus. He's one of those guys. But in verse 70, it said, but Peter denied it again. And a little later, those who stood by said to Peter again, surely, you're one of them, for you're a Galilean and your speech shows it. You, come on. You're with him. You're one of his followers. And in verse 71, Peter getting a little excited here. But he began to curse and to swear, I do not know this man of whom you speak. I'm not with him. Leave me alone. And the second time, the rooster crowed. And Peter called to mind the word that Jesus had said to him, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times. That was not Peter's intention. When he said, I'll give my life for you, he meant it. But then things got a little tough. He ran into one of those giants, somebody that would take his life. And he relied on himself instead of relying on God. But Peter sets a good example for us. Because it goes on to say, and when he thought about it, when he came to himself and realized, what have I done? Just like you and I have done before. We do something and then we say, why did I do that? What did I do? and we get on our knees and we ask God to forgive us. I had no intention on doing that. Don't know why I did it. No excuse. And that's where Peter came to, and it said when he thought about it, he wept. Can you imagine Peter getting on his knees, bawling, repenting of what he had done because he realized what he had done. He relied on himself instead of God. He denied Jesus Christ, a man who he spent every day with, a man who he followed and believed and trusted. But for that moment, trusting himself. But Peter regained his thoughts. What did I do? But just like with Joshua and Caleb, they knew what was right and they weren't going to do anything other than trust God and be thankful to God. And that's an example for you and I. We face giants. We face crime. We face starvation, war, poverty, death, and a world that rejects the Creator. We live in it every day. But God will help us to get through it. God will give us that strength not to get so depressed or so down that we don't know what to do. God will give us that wisdom, that strength that we need. If we remember to always be thankful for what we have, and maybe it's not a lot, but it's enough. And if we remember to thank God for that, to remember to trust God with our life, we, like Joshua and Caleb, will enter the promised land, that land that represents God's kingdom. When Jesus Christ returns, we won't shy away from it. We won't look at that and say it's too dangerous. We'll run for it. Every Thanksgiving, there's an abundance of everything. No matter how much you plan, you always have an abundance of food and drink, everything left over. God gives us an abundance of everything, physically and spiritually. God has sent us on a journey. He's commissioned us to take the gospel of the kingdom of God to the world. And he's given us every tool we ever need, will ever need, to make that happen. We are on a journey to the promised land, just as Israel was. And we can listen to the negativism, if that's what we want. Or we can look back and say, what has God done in my life? Many, many times. And be thankful for God being there when you needed Him. To never say, let me go back to where I was before you called me. To never be in that frame of mind. Because as we read, God gets tired of that. He brought us out of slavery. He's given us that freedom. So when we find ourselves faced with difficulties, let us never forget that God has and will continue to provide and take care of us. He will. He promised to do that. God keeps His promises. What we have to do is simple. Just let God know we're very thankful. That we trust Him with our very life, just as Joshua and Caleb did.